So this morning I want to give a little bit an overview of the meaning of what we are doing, but I will try to give the full depth of what we are exploring, not just a few remarks. So some elements may be a little bit difficult, but you are used to, so it's no problem. So the aim of our meditation, and I don't mean only just sitting motionless, but of all our exploration is freedom. That is why we are doing what we are doing. And freedom means not to depend on anything, not on anything outside, not on anything inside, but to be conditioned by what's arising inside of us. Not to be conditioned by emotions, freedom from external condition, freedom from internal condition, not being conditioned by emotions, by mental state like sleepiness, like agitation, not being conditioned by thoughts, by point of view that we may have about the world. And that's what we're exploring in our practice. So the aim, so to speak, is very ambitious. That's why it takes more than one day of exploration, even more than 2 days of exploration. So freedom is not a way of thinking, neither a way of seeing, it's a way of being. Not something that one make oneself in a way or another way, it's a way of being. And it is difficult to figure out what it could be. Freedom, nice word, but what can it mean? We cannot figure it out because freedom is also freedom from point of view, from beliefs. And if we try to figure it out by thinking about it, we are bound by the way we try to imagine what freedom could be. So we see there is something there which is quite demanding that we cannot make freedom conceptually. We cannot think about it and say it is this way or that way, because that will be binding us. So it's quite demanding. But when I say freedom from external condition, freedom from internal condition, or independent from that, we may wonder and say, how is that possible? That seems completely impossible. Doesn't make sense. Yeah, we can dream about it, and so many religions speak about that, but it seems to be quite just a dream or some ideal, but it does contradict our everyday experience. And it does contradict. Now, come and speak about freedom in the Buddhist tradition, in so many traditions, and that does not seem at all to be in the range of our possibilities. Not in the range of our possibilities, because we see we are affected by sleepiness, by tiredness, by sickness, by emotions, aversions and impatience. So how would it be possible to be free from those conditions? Doesn't make sense. Which means that if this freedom is possible, the view of the world has to be different. If we keep the same view of the world that we have, in this view, freedom is not possible. And if we don't challenge the view of the world that we have, then we cannot even explore this possibility of freedom. The view that we have of the world in this dimension of time and space and so on, that need to be challenged. So usually we try to figure out how freedom, unconditioned freedom, will be possible by improving our situation. We improve a little bit of here, a little bit of there, and finally we hope that we get some kind of unconditioned freedom. But this unconditioned freedom will depend on all those small adjustments. That will be very depending. That would be just some kind of artificial construction. So there is no way that we can build up a freedom, unconditioned freedom. And if we are staying with our own vision of the world, this is conditioned. So it's not possible to base ourselves on a conditioned way of seeing the world and considering an unconditioned freedom. It just does not work. Because then we would need to get rid of the conditioned world, and that would be a great demand. So our meditation is going to question, and maybe the way we see the world in a conditioned way, maybe is not the true way. Maybe that's not the only way to see the world. Maybe the world can be seen in a completely different way. Maybe the world can be seen from the unconditioned way. And then suddenly, when we see from the unconditioned way, maybe something different is possible. Do you understand how there is a switch there? Without this switch, then it's not possible. So usually we want to go from the way we see our situation, build something and hoping to go beyond that, and that does not work. And now we have to imagine, and if the condition, the freedom, unconditioned freedom, was our true reality, and in a sense our bondage was imagination. So we change the world. In the tantric tradition, they say you take the fruit as the path. You take the aim, so to speak, you take the aim of the path as the path itself. You don't take the path as path. You try to build up something that does not work. If the unconditioned freedom is a possibility, if it is a true situation, then all our practice has to be seen from this unconditioned way. And therefore realizing that the conditioning situation is imagination, is a construct. Doesn't mean that it has no structure. It is very well structured. We are well conditioned in the same way. In a sense, Georges Bataille said, death reveals the imposture of reality. That if death is true, as the way we see the world, and death is true, there is something that does not work. We could say the same with the spiritual path. If there is an unconditioned freedom, if we want to pose this possibility, that means that the conditioned world is an imposture. And then we can approach the practice from this angle. We can try, at least to support this possibility. So I'll go through that a little bit to try to make sense and quote a few sutra to see how, in a sense, Buddha's teaching is going very clearly on that, speaking in that sensitivity. In one sutra, which I think it's quite a nice one, the Buddha is teaching a few monks in in the field, and then comes a farmer, a farmer with hair, you know, all over, and then with feet in mud, so he looks like a farmer. And he asked the Buddha, he said, "Well, mendicant, have you seen my oxen?" So mendicant is not a very nice way to speak to a monk or to a spiritual man, you know, mendicant, have you seen my oxen? And the Buddha recognized his Mara, his confusion arising there, challenging the Buddha in front of the monks, you know. So the Buddha asked him, "So what are your oxen?" Oxen, the animal, the buffaloes, if you prefer. And Mara said, "The form, the eyes, and seeing, these are my oxen. Where can you go to escape me? Cannot go outside of form, seeing, and the eyes. Where can you go to escape me? The ears, the sound, and hearing, these, or those are my oxen. Where can you go to escape me?" So describing all the sphere of perception and thought, consciousness, "These are my oxen. Where can you go to escape me?" Challenging the Buddha, "How do you want to escape me? How do you want to escape myself as confusion? Because you cannot go out of form and seeing and eyes." And the Buddha answered, of course, he is the owner of the sutra, so he answered, he will have the last word. He said, "Where there is no eyes, no form, no seeing, there you cannot go. Where there is no sounds, no ears, no hearing consciousness, there you cannot go." So, quoting the five senses, "And where there are no thoughts, no concept, and no consciousness, there you cannot go." It seems that Mara understood and flies away. He feels defeated. But it's something very strange. He says, "Where there is no form, no eyes, no seeing, there you cannot go." What is meant by that? Does it mean that, I don't know, even blind, we still would hear, so blind and close our eyes, but still we have thought. So how to make sense of what the Buddha is saying there? It's a very strange sutra in a sense. But it also challenged our view of the world. And here the Buddha is not promoting some kind of emptiness where there will be nothing left. First, it would be not so appealing, and who would like a freedom where there is nothing anymore? And it seems that it will be a destruction of oneself, that there would be no form, no sounds, nothing anymore. So how to make sense of that? In one other sutra, Kachana Sutra, when one monk come and asked the Buddha, said, "Well, right view, people speak about right view of the world. So what is that right view? What is a proper vision of the world? What it is to see the world properly, which means, in a sense, in an unconditioned way, a vision of the world that is not binding us." So the Buddha answered, he said, "Well, the world, for the most part, depends upon a duality, the notion it is and the notion it is not. But for those who see with right understanding the arising of the world as it happened, there is no notion of it is not." He said, when you see how the world is appearing, he doesn't say nothing is appearing. When you see how the world is appearing, nobody would say it is not. But when you see other world disappearing every instant, then nobody would say it is. Both ways. So everything is. Kachana is one dead end. To speak about things as existing, everything is, that is one dead end. Everything is not is another dead end. Without being stuck in either of those dead ends, the Buddha teaches the middle way. So he teaches a way that is not bound by it is or it is not. It exists or it does not exist. So now we have our solution. Which means that, not that, of course, that the world has disappeared and there's a strange world. We try to imagine what could be this world like where we could not say it is or it is not. How would it look like? Would it be different? But it is not that it is different. It is that we don't grasp at it. As we mentioned many times, what is meditation? Meditation is non-grasping. What is the reason for meditation? What the aim of meditation? Non-grasping. And non-grasping is through concept. It is and it is not. So when we connect to this world in which we move, we dance, but when we connect in this world without reducing it to it is or it is not, not to concept. We can dance with the world without wanting to fix it with it is and it is not. Then, for the Buddha, that is the right view. Right view means a view of the unconditioned and being unconditioned in this way of seeing the world. So it has nothing to do with changing our perception, seeing the blue-red or whatever. It is just the way we relate to it, not wanting to fixate the world in this way or that way. You know, it is this way, it is that, it exists, it does not exist. It's a completely fluid way to be with the world. All the grasping is immediately fixating, stopping it. And we've explored that in our way of just moving here, you know, not stopping in being standing. If I fixate to this notion, I am standing, then there is a grasping at that with a concept. And then the life is completely dead there, or any position that we have been exploring. As soon as we want to grasp at it through a concept, through an image, we have switched from the world of life to a world of concept, and this is conditioning. In another sutra, the Buddha said, It's not the reality that is conditioning us, it's not the reality that is binding us. It is our way of holding reality that is binding us, not reality. It's not that we are limited because we have a body, because we need air to breathe and all that. That's not what is limiting us. It's the way that we are holding on to that is a limitation. And this way of non-grasping, it's not specific to Buddhism. I've already mentioned quite a few times Master Eckhart speaking about the poor in spirit. He explained the poor in spirit is not to have or to have nothing, to want nothing, to know nothing. So it's also not much is left. And for him it is a way to know God. Although he says he doesn't know God, but God needs to know himself within the person. So God does the job, you don't need to do the job. So there's no grasping. So we find this notion of, I think in many traditions, how we, by fixating the world through holding on to our position, to our concept, then finally we are stuck with that. Our concept, our view of the world is like the bars of our jail. Then we are knocking on those bars that we ourselves imagine. And then we complain. How to get out? And imagine, as long as we believe those bars are true, we can look for many solutions to get out, but we'll never get out if we hold them as being true. This is the most fascinating situation. We all are the bar of our jail, and then we complain. Let me out. This is in such a way that we find, let's say in Vimalakirti, for example, when Manjushri, the Bodhisattva wisdom, asked him, what is the right way to freedom? What is the right way to freedom? Interesting. He said, it is by following the wrong way that you get to freedom. Following the wrong way, what do you mean by that? You mean that forget about a way. If you believe there is a way, first you believe you are in a jail, and then you look for the key. So challenging by following the wrong way. Which means that don't believe the way. If there is a way, it means first you hold on to your situation as being conditioned. And only that, only in this way, can the condition make sense or be a possibility. Maybe there is not, maybe it's just a dream, or maybe not, but if it has to be a possibility, then we have to see it from this way. Otherwise, building the unconditioned world from small piece of conditioned world, that is not a possibility, that is just meaningless. So either one or the other is true, either the unconditioned or the conditioned. So we choose. If we make the condition true, then okay, we are stuck and we can dance in our jail. Or if we make the unconditioned maybe the reality, then the unconditioned has no true reality. But of course, if the unconditioned has no true reality, if the condition has no true reality, so the unconditioned is unconditioning from what? It's not the opposition of a conditioned world. You're with me. The unconditioned cannot be the negation of the condition, because it will be dependent. So even this duality, unconditioned condition, just collapse. This is still holding to some kind of framework. So we are left, as the Buddha said, no form, no eyes. And it doesn't mean that we're in some kind of darkness. On the contrary, we dance with everything, but we don't hold on to anything. Okay, that may be fine, it may be interesting theory, or not interesting theory, but now how can we go about exploring that? It's fine, okay, we are not conditioned, so that's fine, let's dance in the unconditioned. Bang, oh, I'm sorry, well, that was not supposed to be there in the unconditioned world. I should not, you know, get the elbow of somebody in my eyes, so suddenly it's strange. So how can we explore that? No need to dream about or about the unconditioned, but in our situation, as I said, we have explored that, and in which way we can explore that situation through our meditation. But meditation doesn't mean to sit motionless, because this is very limited. If we can be free and we can be unconditioned, it is not so interesting to be unconditioned when we sit with closed eyes, because we still need to move around, then we are conditioned. So we need to explore that in any movement, in any situation. I remember in Nepal, I went to see old Lama asking about this practice of freedom, which I hope he would give me some technique. He said, well, nice, he's going to tell me how to practice. Really a professional in that. So I was hoping that he would say, you sit like that, you look like that. And he said, well, it's just an attitude in daily life, you know. And I went away with nothing in my pocket, in my hand. And it takes me 30 years to understand, and I have not yet finished. But just I thought, I think this master, he knows what he's speaking about, so it may make sense. Also, it doesn't make sense yet. So we like to be interested. So how we can explore that in our situation? So not holding to it is or it is not, it exists or it does not exist. I mean also not to hold to any concept, not grasping. I spoke about grasping. And grasping is always through a concept. It is not. I guess even if we had tension in the body, there will still be some concept or image of that grasping physically. And it's not because we are going to try to get rid, you know, of all the grasping. I should get rid of this thought and that image. Well, that would be quite endless if we need to get some kind of vacuum cleaner in our attitude so that anything appearing, we get rid of it. So that's not, I think, the way we can explore that. But you see, for one hand, it is difficult to grasp itself. You can always play around, but you know, it's not really grasping. If I get another one, I can grasp its hand. So in the same way, in our practice, when we are close to ourselves, so close, so there is no distance. So close to any experience, moving, situation, seeing, hearing, when we are so close to the experience, when there is no distance anymore, there is no space for grasping. Grasping always needs some distance. It can be very, very narrow distance. But when there is no distance whatsoever, there is no grasping anymore. Even if I have this notion, I am standing, I am seeing, there is still a distance. There is still I and seeing, I and standing. And this I and seeing, I and standing is already a distance in which grasping can happen. I grasp this standing as I grasp this seeing as I. So as long as we, or as I have said, we step out of ourselves, there is usually duality when we step out of ourselves, at least in our experience. So the path is to be so close to any experience, and not only position, movement, but also emotion, to be so close to the sadness, to be so close to sleepiness, to agitation, that it cannot be grasped anymore. When there is just this sleepiness, like just one hand, and this sleepiness not being grasped at, then it's not conditioned. I would not say at this time sleepiness exists or it does not exist. And it doesn't mean that if I were to explain, I could still say I experience sleepiness. But at this time of the experiencing, I would not say anything. At this time of experiencing, if I were to ask myself or somebody were to ask myself, does it exist or does it not exist? I'd say, there's nothing to do with that. It is not in this world of this and that, it exists or it does not exist. It does not belong to this world. Or the world of concept has nothing to say about that. And is not a negation of the usefulness of concept. Doesn't mean then we get out and people are asking you and you said, no, I start to get mute because I don't want to use concept. Nothing to do with that. We can still play with concept and we can still use them, even with a thought. There can be a thought, there can be imagination, but when we are close to the thought or to the imagination, this is also not being grasped and this is also freedom. It doesn't mean that suddenly nothing anymore is happening. So this way of being so close to the experience, that suddenly we are not going to state it as it exists or it does not exist. So it's not a going away from ourselves, not going away from reality, on the contrary, it's getting closer and closer to reality in such a way that it cannot be stated that it exists or it does not exist. And I tried to express that, and I think maybe one word would, for me, may express that. And I think English does work, the same word, you know, is coincidence. You know. Coincidence, when we coincide with ourselves completely. You know, you may have two circles with same diameter, so they can speak about coincidence of two circles, but now the coincidence of only one circle. So when we completely coincide with ourselves, completely, then it is freedom. If we are not coinciding with ourselves, then at this time, we bump into ourselves constantly. Then there is bondage, then there is limitation. And this way of speaking about coinciding is also a way of speaking about non-duality. But non-duality seems a negative way. Coinciding seems to express the fact that we really do experience ourselves with this deep intimacy. And I will quote another sutra, and I think that they seem to go all along well, those I chose this morning. And it's a monk, Malunkyaputta, when he was young, he challenged the Buddha. He said, you know, you are not telling us if the world, you are not telling us about the reality of the world. You know, you don't tell us if the world is eternal or not, if it is limited or unlimited, if the Buddha exists after life or after his death or not. And this monk said, if you cannot give me an answer, I'll leave the monastery. Outspoken, you know, went to the Buddha and said, well, okay, now if you don't know all those things, what is the use for me to stay with you? And the Buddha said, well, you know, that's fine, you can ask those questions, but that will not help you. You'll die before you have the answer. I think this is all that abstract question. He said, what I'm dealing with is suffering and conditioning and the freedom from that. That's what I'm interested in. I'm not interested in science about the cosmos. You know. So it seems this monk stayed with the monastery because now he's very old. I don't think he has made much progress, but he goes to the Buddha and said, well, I'm old monk, so please tell me what to practice in a nutshell. Simple for an old monk. He was much older than us, so don't worry. But the Buddha said, well, even to a young monk, I would give the same advice. And he asked Malunkyaputta, he said, well, can you experience desire for what you don't see, what you have not seen and what you will not see? Can you have desire for that? Malunkya said, no. Can you have desire from what you don't hear, what you have not heard, and what you will not be hearing? He said, no. We have been the same with Mara and this world where there is no seeing. So he's, of course, going through all the five senses and also the thoughts. And the monk said, no. So you see here, it's also strange because he's saying, for what does not exist for you, do you have desire, aversion, hatred? For what you are not holding to? And the monk said, no. He says, the Tathagata, the Buddha, when seeing, does not construct a seer and a seen. He does not construct a seer seeing something. He does not construct a hearer hearing a sound. He does not construct a taster and so on. Does not construct a thinker thinking a thought. He said, when you will be, when in seeing there will be just seeing for you, when seeing there will be just seeing and hearing just hearing, thinking just thinking, you will be neither here nor there, and that will be the end of suffering. That will be the end of conditioning. So it doesn't say there will be nothing. In seeing, there will be just seeing. In hearing, just hearing. In physical sensation, just physical sensation. In thinking, just thinking. So no grasping at that, the unity. Then you will be neither here nor there. There is no self, that I, that is going to find a place to stand there. He said that is the end of suffering. The end of conditioning. And it's not because in this position one need to get rid of something. But on the contrary, is to be in such an intimacy within ourselves that in this sense there is no need for any construction or any notion. There's no need, because it does work plain. We could say in this unity or this coincidence with ourselves, there is perfect harmony, and there is no need to hold on to anything. It's happening naturally. And naturally there is no grasping. And naturally, at this time, one would not say it exists or it does not exist. Not because one belongs to another philosophical school, just before, because it doesn't make sense to speak about that. It exists, it doesn't exist, it's a foreign language in this situation, in which language is not the reference. Usually language is a reference. It is not, we can argue about things we have not seen, but the concept must be true. Plenty of philosophy where if something is true, it has to be conceptualized, or we can conceptualize. The concept is true. If the concept is true, then it has to exist. On the contrary, if there is no concept, it does not exist. Here it's completely different. What we trust is the inner experience before any notion. And I'll again quote this remark by Blanchot. I bring my friend because otherwise we'll get lost. But when I was speaking with Bataille, and Bataille was expressing his inner experience, it seems that he had spontaneous experience of something like the incondition. But then he was wondering, he said, but how can I know that is true? How can I know? Maybe it's just, you know, some kind of inner experience, and how can I know it is true? And Blanchot answered, I think, very nicely. He said, this experience is its own authority. Why this experience is its own authority? Because it does not depend on anything, does not depend on concept. Any experience that depends on concept can be wrong. I was told a wrong story, or I read the wrong book, it's a wrong... But when an experience does not depend on any concept or any situation or no thought, then it has its own evidence that one cannot doubt about. In later Buddhist literature, they express that in a funny way. They say, even if all the Buddha came and say you are wrong, you will not believe what they say. The experience is so much evident in itself, because it's not depending on anything, not depending on concepts. So it may not always appear clear in the way we explore things, but it's still that. To get to this way of not stepping out of ourselves, emotion or whatever, we are not pushing anything away, but trying to be in this with this intimacy within ourselves that can be experienced, and that can be experienced at any time. It does not need, because we don't need to build up something so complex. On the contrary, when suddenly we allow that to happen, to be so close to ourselves, there is this trust, in a sense, at any time that can be experienced, explored. Doesn't mean that it lasts for a long time if we want to speak about duration. So sometimes it's just suddenly it does appear to make sense, so to speak, although it's beyond sense. But that we don't need to build up, it can happen at any time. But if we believe, first I need to correct a few things. Then that's not to be difficult, because we may spend our life correcting something, correcting. It's endless. So there's nothing to correct. Everything is just as it is, and it's good to be this way. So it's a very strange way, which means that the unconditioned, the freedom, is what we are now. And we look for it everywhere. We make things complex, very complex things. Looking for what we cannot escape from. I think Longchenpa, very great Tibetan master, said, but how not to burst laughing? It's such an absurd situation to try to get out when you are out already and there is no inside. Now, of course, it's not a way to convince ourselves, yeah, I'm already free, I'm already free, I'm already free, because that is just another way to get more confusion. And I think the Chan tradition is very, very clear about that. The way they express it, it's usually so simple and so striking. And a highly respected Chan master was asking, what is your practice? People wanted to do his own practice because he was a very well-known Chan master. He said, well, then I go and fetch water, I boil my rice, I eat my rice, I drink, and when I'm tired, I sleep. That was his practice. He said, well, that doesn't make sense. So many people do that. No, because when they go and get water, they are already doing something else. You know? But this simplicity of just being doing what he is doing, and that is practice. Another of those Chan stories. One young monk, must have been bright, come to a monastery and goes to the master after the meal and say, well, would you instruct me? Yeah, I want to know how to be free. And the master said, well, did you eat your rice? He said, yes. And said, go and wash your bowl. And he got awakened. That's why it's good to wash dishes after the meal. You know. Got awakened. Because he understood the simplicity of it. It was not about anything special. It's about the simplicity in just doing what he would be doing. So that the spirit with what we're exploring here is nothing other, but maybe to add a few elements that also may explain some element of the practice, it's also true that especially from tantric tradition, later tradition, we also have holding with ourselves, energy being blocked and held, and that's why sometimes we do some practice that are a little bit challenging that and making them move. Because if there is a lot of tension and holding in ourselves, the intention just to be with what we are doing may be hindered by all those blocks of energy. So sometimes we work a little bit on that. Not, I want to unblock this energy or that energy, but we know if we work with something, then energy starts to flow a bit better, and this flowing allows us to be much more simple. It's like, and I think that the fantastic richness of the tantric tradition to say that there is a physical dimension to confusion. It's not just a wrong way of thinking, it's also a wrong way of holding oneself. And that's why we also work with that. Again, I'm not working on getting ring of block here and there. I don't know anything about that. But I know when exploring, as we have done yesterday, somebody holding your hand or something like that, it's also challenge a little bit the holding we have. So having some fluidity within ourselves so that we can really be simply with what we are doing in this coincidence with any situation, movement we have been exploring, but also mental state. And I say respect whatever you feel, can be sad and just be with that. If there is this coincidence with sadness, then there is freedom in that. And I don't need to get rid of sadness. But of course you don't need to believe what I said. I mean, it's something we need to explore. And I speak often of sleepiness, how fantastic it is when we can just be with that sleepiness and suddenly we see I'm completely present and clear in sleepiness. Sleepiness is not covering my mind because I'm just coinciding with this sleepiness, and that's fine. I don't need to get rid of sleepiness to be present or anything. So that's a bit what we're exploring in my sense, and that's why we explore this way. I don't know if it is the best way to explore, but at least it's a way I like to explore.